Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Isabel Hardman and I'm joined by James Forsyth. We've just had the result of the latest Brexit vote in the House of Commons. It was a neutral motion tabled by the government and the government was defeated. So this motion basically said that the House supported the approach to leaving the European Union that it voted on a few weeks before. And the reason that there was this defeat was that the European Research Group of Brexiteer Tory MPs objected to the fact that the motion appeared to endorse not just their own preferred approach, which is to seek alternative arrangements to the backstop, but also another vote which passed on that day, which rules out no deal, or says the House of Commons doesn't want a no deal exit. So James, this was a defeat by 45 votes. Is it a particularly bad defeat for the government?
It is a bad defeat. I think 45 is at the upper end of the amount by which the government feared they might lose by. I also think it is a significant blow to Theresa May's negotiating strategy. Now, people from the government are quick to point out that this vote has no kind of legal force. It doesn't compel a government change in government policy. But Theresa May's whole message to the EU since the Brady Amendment passed the Commons was, look, if you give me a legally binding change to the backstop, I can get a deal through the House of Commons. Why don't you do that? It'll solve everything. The EU said, oh, I'm not sure that it would solve everything. And tonight's result will convince them that their analysis of the situation is correct. And it will also mean that they'll go back to them saying, look, Jeremy Corbyn's suggesting this customs union compromise. Why don't you cut a deal with Labour? You know, we do these grand compromises in our parliaments a lot. You know, this is the only way you're going to get a stable majority for your deal is if both front benches are in favour of it. And that is obviously not something that Theresa May wants to do, because she's invested a lot of her personal capital, both at home and abroad, in saying that the UK is going to have an independent trade policy. And then compounding that is that she knows that backing a customs union would exacerbate division in her own party to such an extent that a split would become a real possibility.
Now, there was visible frustration on the face of Chief Whip Julian Smith in the Commons. He sort of stormed out almost, shaking his head in frustration at the Brexiteers as he went. But we haven't had a government response, have we? Because Theresa May wasn't there for the result. And we had a barrage of points of order, as we seem to be always doing now, from Jeremy Corbyn, from Ian Blackford, the SNP Westminster leader, and then from Steve Baker from the European Research Group. And both Blackford and Corbyn complained that May wasn't there and demanded that she come back and explain what's going to happen next. What do you think the government's response is going to be, James?
I think the government response will be to attempt to pretend that the vote on the 29th of January was important and significant, and this vote isn't.
How are they going to explain that?
There is obviously a slight contradiction. I think that, in a way, the next thing we now wait for is when the Cooper Amendment returns towards the end of this month, which would compel the government to ask for an extension if it can't come to a deal with the EU fairly rapidly. And I think that is the question. I think there's an interesting suggestion from David Mundell, the Scottish Secretary, on Twitter tonight, that there might be a proper meaningful vote in February as well, yeah, which is an interesting suggestion.
That is, because previously, well, certainly in the past few days, it had been suggested that the meaningful vote might not come until a few days before the official Brexit date of March 29th. That was something that Andrea Leadsom had said. So
I think before tonight, the assumption had been that the government would turn up to the EU Council on the 21st of March and try and get everything sorted at that moment.
Yeah. So the DUP voted with the government, which is unusual. They're very closely tied to the European Research Group. They often negotiate with them. They take the same positions a lot of the time. So what's going on there?
I think the DUP aren't prepared to kind of end the kind of goodwill that they've got with the government and their position in the room on their stuff. I also think the ERG were, I mean, you can debate the intellectual point they are making, but there are obviously real world consequences to what they're doing in terms of weakening the Prime Minister's negotiating position.
But they argue, so Steve Baker has been passionately arguing this today, that actually they're the ones who are strengthening Theresa May's hand, because if you take no deal off the table, then there's nothing concentrating European leaders' minds.
I don't think anyone... Okay, maybe I'm wrong about this, but I don't think that in any of the chancelleries of Europe, if this motion had passed tonight, they'd have popped open the champagne and said, oh, the Brits have taken no deal off the table. So I think that is a slightly odd read. I think it's more that the Europeans rolled their eyes at her decision to turn back to her own party and her confidence and supply partners, the DUP, after losing by quite so many votes. What was it, 230 votes the first time round? And I think they'll be like, oh, come on, this proves that the majority for the Brady Amendment on the 29th of January, you know, it's all stuck together with, you know, with kind of Pritt stick rather than super glue.
So today's status has kind of wobbled about this week, hasn't it? It was billed as being the Valentine's Day massacre. And then when it became clear that the Cooper Amendment wasn't going to crop up again this week, then it was appearing as though it was going to be quite a dull vote. And then obviously we've had a government defeat, which just shows that I think an hour is now a long time in politics rather than a week. But we did have an amendment that was threatening to be voted on, which came from Anna Soubry, and she was demanding that the government publish its economic impact assessments of a no-deal exit. And she then withdrew this at the last minute after ministers said they'd meet with her to discuss this. And it was quite interesting because the European Research Group, some of them were thinking of voting with her on this because they didn't really see there as being anything to fear in the no-deal assessments. And also that there was an interesting sort of procedural issue here, which was that the Soubry Amendment basically deleted the government amendment, which was the thing that they had their beef with. Now, do you think that the Soubry Amendment is problematic for ministers, or are they not particularly bothered about it, which is why they've offered this meeting? Because she said she's only withdrawing it for now.
Well, I think a lot of the stuff in it has leaked out to the newspapers already,
yeah.
The first thing. I also think you tapped on the real reason why she was so happy to withdraw it. Because there were people in the ERG, calmer voices, who I think were, not that calm because they still abstained, but people who realised that it's not a good look for the ERG to be the people who break this Tory unity, and it's not a good look for the ERG to defeat the government at this point in the process. And I think they thought, right, we'll vote with the super amendment and or abstain on the super amendment and let that through. And then that means that there's no vote on the government amendment, the government motion, sorry. And we avoid a rift in the lute between the ERG and the government. I think Anna Soubry, who, how shall we put this, is not the fondest of the ERG, saw that there was a chance to sow discord between the government and the ERG, and so was quite happy to pull the motion. I also think that, again, on all this, you know, a lot of this stuff is out there. I don't think this is quite as devastating as getting the Attorney General's legal advice, for example, which was, okay, that was new stuff that we didn't know.
But there is something tantalising, isn't there, about a secret document? And as you say, it becoming less secret will almost automatically make it less interesting. There was also a dramatic intervention from Sir Oliver Letwin, the former Cabinet Office Minister, who said that he'd taken a while to reach this conclusion, but he now was starting to think that Theresa May would in the end be quite willing to have a no-deal exit. And this was interesting. I mean, I'm quite interested in how much the Conservative Party is now existing or not existing on the basis of whether people trust one another's motives. And this was another example of that, of basically a former minister, someone who's not a kind of backbench conspiracy theorist generally, saying that he doesn't trust the Prime Minister's motives anymore.
I think at the beginning of this year, people thought that Theresa May would ultimately never do no deal. But her character was simply not set up by that. Her former chief of staff, Nick Timothy, you know, not many people can claim to really understand what makes Theresa May tick. But I think he is one of the people who can. He wrote a newspaper column saying, I don't think she'll ever do it. And that's interesting because he is much more relaxed, gung-ho for no deal than she is. So it wasn't hope being the father of the fort. So I think what's significant about the Letwin thing is it also serves his purposes in trying to get people to vote for his amendment. His look, she really might do this. You really do have to bind her hand. You can't just trust her saying, don't worry, let me go to the council on March the 21st. And, you know, don't worry, I won't let us go over the cliff. You've got to actually bind her hands. You can't just take this on trust. And so I think you do see him trying to do that. I think the Cooper Amendment is going to be very interesting because there is going to be a big choice, because I think the number of Labour rebels on it won't drop that much. And that means that government ministers will have to decide whether they are actually prepared to take the plunge and resign to vote for it. Although, interestingly, one cabinet minister today, who is not of their crew, was saying that, you know, they could conceive of a situation, and don't laugh, where people don't resign but just go through the lobby to vote for Cooper and kind of dare the government to sack them. Now, this would be a complete and utter ripping up of all the normal rules of British politics.
It's what has happened with the Labour whips, though, hasn't it? Some of them have rebelled on Brexit and held onto their jobs for a good long while afterwards.
And, you know, and so we wait and see what might happen. But I think this is tricky. I think also the other question is, if Theresa May thinks she's going to lose cabinet ministers and lose the vote, does she herself try and kind of get out ahead of Cooper?
Well, we'll bring you more developments as they come on Coffee House, particularly if there's a response from the Prime Minister. Thanks very much for listening to this. You can subscribe to this on the iTunes Store.